It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, the other day, I went very early in the morning. It may have been Wednesday morning, the day after some sort of election, I don't remember. When I may have gone early to the grocery store while I still felt functional and got a yellow onion that I needed for a recipe and also $95 worth of comfort food of varying types just to sort of get through life.
Right.
Anyway, in the process, I bought a 12-pack of Mr. Pibb Zero.
Mr. Pibb Zero, huh?
Yes, and I liked Mr. Pibb growing up, and there was not, to my knowledge, a diet version. So I've been very pleased to see this and took this as an opportunity to get some Mr. Pibb action into my life. It's quite nice. What would you say the flavor of Mr. Pibb is?
Well, you know, back in the day, we would have Mr. Pibb when we couldn't have Dr. Pepper, and they were pretty close in flavor as far as we were concerned. I don't know if that was ever true, if it's true now.
I think it is provided as an alternative to Dr. Pepper. Mm-hmm. But likewise, what flavor would you say Dr. Pepper was?
Yeah, that's a huge mystery.
There is a widely circulating legend that it's prune flavored.
Yep, which, I've heard that.
Like, I do not think that is the case for various marketing reasons, but I have tasted Dr. Pepper, and if you said, yeah, it's prune flavored, I'd be like, yeah, all right. I could believe that. Supposedly, Dr. Pepper is famously a combination of 23 flavors, and they refuse to say what they are, but they also officially have said none of them are prune, I believe. They don't want nothing to do with prune. And Mr. Pibb is not the same. I think if you blindfolded me, I could tell you one was Dr. Pepper and one was Mr. Pibb.
Okay.
I think. But are you curious what Mr. Pibb defines its own flavor as on its container?
Sure.
Spicy cherry soda.
When did they start putting that on the can? I don't remember that.
Some cans will just do that. Sometimes they'll be like a light, flavorful citrus soda or something like that.
Yeah.
And on this can currently, it says sugar-free spicy cherry soda, artificially flavored. Not so it's not flavored with natural spicy cherries. These spicy cherries come from a laboratory.
So you think that's a clue to what Dr. Pepper is? Like it's actually a cherry-based thing, but then they add spices, whatever that means, and then that's how you get that flavor?
The 23 flavors are cherry and then 22 other spices.
Well, I mean,
it's not even, I've seen pops call themselves like a spiced something. This isn't even spiced cherry. It's spicy cherry.
I know. That makes it sound like whenever you say something spicy, you pretty much mean one spice, like pepper or you know, right. Some kind of pot.
These cherries are spicy.
You don't mean anise or cinnamon. You mean something like peppers.
the Scoville units on a Mr. Pibb.
Well, I mean, I think people would call the original things that flavor, I don't know what flavors root beer now, but the original things that flavored root beers, I think they'd call them spices, right? I think that's what they'd call them.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'd say root beers. But they're not all roots. Some of it's bark, some of it's leaves, some of it's other things. And but they would never call root beer a spicy beverage. They might call it a spiced beverage, you know, because it has spices.
But not this one. Yeah. Spicy cherry.
Okay, but if you think of it as spiced, though, that does make sense. Like, if it's like something like a root beer in terms of it's made from spices, and then there's a heavy note of cherry in it, I can see how that would make something like a Mr. Pibb or a Dr. Pepper flavor, depending on what those spices are. But we don't know what they are.
Yeah, but it's like... this one's... Okay. There are two kinds of flavor names. Regular and bullshit. I think this one is bullshit.
Yeah.
A regular flavor is when you're like, I'm going to make something orange flavored. I'm going to do it whatever crazy shit way. Maybe there is, this thing has never seen an orange. But the point is, I am going for something that tastes orange flavored.
Yeah.
And at the end, I'm going to be like, that's orange.
Yeah. Or yeah, strawberry or watermelon. Orange.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then there's bullshit, which is, I was working in the lab late one night and I knocked some shit into some other shit, and then my nephew tasted it and was like, that's really good. And that's how we created Fanta. But for the flavors, we had to ask people. Like nobody... What I'm saying is nobody sought out to make spicy cherry soda.
Yeah.
That has never happened.
Yeah.
Somebody made something and was like, yeah, people will drink this. All right, what flavor is it? And they're like, it's cherry. I'm like, that's not cherry. But it's like a spicy cherry.
Yeah, it is. It's like a spicy cherry. Let's go with that.
All right. Is that, can we put spicy? They're not. Who's going to turn us in? Like, whatever. Yeah, it's spicy cherry. It's fine.
Oh, my
like,
goodness.
So like, I'm not saying it's not spicy cherry. I'm just saying it's a bullshit flavor.
Do colas taste like cola? I mean, do we know that? I mean,
originally, I've had, you know, hippie sodas just made with the cola nut. And there's a thing.
Okay, so when you drink a Coke, it's like, yeah, that's, it tastes a little like that.
Yeah, they worked really hard to get proprietary, but I mean, I definitely think cola flavor is in there.
Is a real thing, okay.
Yeah. It may not involve any actual cola these days, but...
And, like, I've actually made some root beer flavors from original, like, roots and stuff. So I know that most root beers probably were formulated with actual, you know, plant matter and whatever at one time.
Yeah.
But I've often thought this before, even before our conversation, I've often thought this, that Dr. Pepper is the only beverage I know that I could easily believe is not based on any real thing. Like every other soda is, at least, like you said, is at least based on a real thing, even if it's not made of a real thing. But Dr. Pepper is like nothing else. And Mr.
Maybe
Pibb,
it's literally by accident. Like maybe they know there are 23 flavors because 23 of the little test bottles like fell into the rat. But they don't know which 23.
Not really. But they replicated it somehow. So who knows?
It was between flavor 18 and 41. We also lost the answer key. So
there are probably some other ones that I'm just not aware of, you know, like some regional sodas, like, oh, this doesn't taste like anything else, but nobody knows what it tastes like.
Well, but this came up for me in the 90s when we were in the UK, and they have different potato chip flavors or crisp flavors. Mm. And there was one that was like roast beef and mustard or whatever. And we were eating it and we're like, wow, it really does kind of taste like it. How do they come up with that? And the professor was with us, was like, they don't. They spend a lot of time coming up with a flavor people like. After that's done, they spend some time asking people what the flavor is.
How they would describe it, yeah.
Exactly. It's not the other way
around. That's kind of clever. I mean,
it's, yeah.
If that's true, that's clever.
It's way more efficient.
Hmm.
Now, once I heard that, I'm like, yeah, it would be dumb to do it the other way.
And really hard, like, because how could you do it? Because most of the time you're experimenting with these things, you have no idea what it's going to taste like. So yeah. Just keep doing it until it's good.
You're like, we've made a chip that tastes exactly like cocktail sauce. It turns out everyone hates it.
Right.
But we nailed, they all agree this tastes like cocktail sauce, but they also all agree that shouldn't be a potato chip.
Yeah. Right.
So that was a waste of time.
But I mean, there are some things that, like, I believe that ranch chips is because they tried to make ranch, or, you know, nacho cheese.
Yeah,
they actually tried to make that.
Yeah.
But the more weird.
Get close. So, like, cheddar cheese and sour cream, which has become kind of a popular flavor, mm-hmm. may have just been cheddar cheese. And they're like, okay, people like it. And they're like, okay, so it's cheddar cheese. And they're like, kind of, it's a little sour. But I mean, it's not bad.
Okay,
but well, it's like cheddar cheese and sour cream. We're like, yeah. Okay, we can do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that. Saying they always do it by just knocking 23 bottles. Like, I'm sure they have goals, but the main goal is, will people eat it?
And yeah, will people eat it?
Yeah. Maybe the roast beef one was like, it's got that other weird thing. People like it. It's kind of, it'll be roast beef and mustard. It's fine.
Oh, man. So interesting. Well,
we can't be like roast beef and glutamate number 75. That's not a good salmon flavor. We'll call it mustard.
Well, the lore that I kind of always understood about Dr. Pepper, because beverages have lore, you know,
yes.
Was whoever
only had a master's degree, but it was when people didn't check up on that stuff.
It was actually formulated in the way that a lot of early beverages were formulated by a pharmacist, say, and they were actually trying to use what they thought were medicinal things, and then when they were satisfied with the concoction in terms of what they thought it could do for people health-wise, then the next consideration was, well, how can we make it taste better? And so that's when they would add a sugar or a fruit or whatever. And then when
they had one rule, we can put as much as we want in, but we're not taking anything out.
Right. Right. And Dr. Pepper is when it finally reached a point where, oh, this is just tolerable. This people will like this. This is tasty, right? And they'll drink this thing and it will also help what ails them and whatever else. And that's how you got it. It was random, but it was also guided a little bit by two factors. One being, I want to make something that has these medicinal properties. And two, I want it to taste good. And
yeah. If you take the medicinal angle out, that's pretty much how I made all my self-serve soft drinks whenever we would go out.
Yeah.
And by the end, I couldn't tell you what flavor it was, but I liked it.
Well, you know, Europeans typically don't like root beer. Recently, Abby was watching a reaction from a Portuguese guy, I guess, who had never had root beer. And I said, I know exactly what's going to happen here. He's going to hate it. And when he describes what he doesn't like about it, he's going to say it tastes like medicine. And that's exactly what happened. Europeans think that root beer tastes like medicine in much the same way that some people who don't, they don't have any experience with mint outside of their toothpaste, don't like mint. And if you give them something that has mint in it, they go, ah, it tastes like toothpaste. For some reason, there must be some medicines over in Europe that taste like root beer. And
yeah, I was going to say they have nice root beer. They have good medicine.
But they don't like it. Well, although when you look up sarsaparilla, for example, like it's a botanical and medicinal properties, it often is mentioned that it has a medicine-y flavor, which I never thought that until I saw it in that description and then later heard Europeans who didn't like root beer saying that. So I think there's something about the European palate or the European experience. I've heard this too about, there are some people that don't like anything cherry flavored because their earliest experiences with cherry flavor was cough medicine.
Mm.
So if you give them something that has a vague artificial cherry flavor, they think, it tastes like cough medicine. I hate that. So
I have similar thing with cookie dough cheesecake. Doesn't come up a lot because that's kind of specific, but you know, there was a craze for a while, and the first medicine I had ever tasted like cookie dough cheesecake, and it's just thrown me off the flavor profile completely.
I don't have anything like that. I mean, I've had medicines and all kind, and you know, I still like mint. Just because it's in toothpaste doesn't throw me off. I had when I was a little kid, I had cough medicine. That now, of course, when I was a kid, though, there was awful, bitter tasting cough medicine. And then there was the cherry cough medicine that didn't taste good, but it tasted better than the bitter stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think I actually have a positive opinion about cherry flavor because of that.
If I like cherry flavor, I like real cherry flavor. I like fake cherry flavor.
Yeah, I do too.
If a cherry flavor starts to taste familiar like a medicine I've had, I won't like it. But it's not. I haven't got a single flavor across the board like that.
Me neither. But then there's other things completely, like the whole what's the thing that tastes like soap to some people?
The cilantro.
Cilantro. It tastes like soap to me, which of course makes people say, how do you even know what soap tastes like? But I don't know. I mean, maybe it tastes like, I think soap smells, because I've never eaten soap, but it tastes like soap to me a little bit. Not that I don't like it on things, but you have to have it in just the right amount, or it's...
Well, and supposedly it's a genetic thing that can create that soap taste, but also, as with most food aversions, you can get through it if you just eat a bunch of it, but if it tastes like soap, I don't know why you'd bother. I love cilantro, but it doesn't taste like that.
Can people get through, like, if their aversion is about a texture... I guess they can get through it. I've known
people.
Yeah, yeah. People who, I've known some people who couldn't eat bananas, but they got over that somehow because they were too mushy. But you don't like things in like the melon family, like melons and cucumbers, right?
I'm good on cucumbers now. I've worked at it and I like cucumbers now.
Oh, okay.
They're not my favorite things, but in a lot of things I like, and I can just eat them just fine. Cool. Yeah, I'm not into melons. It's not that bad. If I was somewhere fancy and they serve melon, I could eat it fine. And if I'm ever served something with melon, I'll usually at least try it, see if it works.
But that's cool.
I'm working on black olives. Not very hard, but I am working on them.
What's your thing with black olives?
I don't like them.
That's it. That's not like they're not too salty or too something you can name. You just don't
No. I just do not like the flavor of black. I also don't like the flavor of green olives, but I really don't like the flavor of green olives.
Mm.
Kalamata's will also be troublesome for me, but if I can just get through the door on basic black olives, it's going to open up a lot of things.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magic Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that started by talking about Mr. Pibb Zero Sugar, because that's the only fun thing to talk about. So here we are. Those of you who thought we were way too chipper at the beginning, although this will be the second episode since the results of the U.S. election, it is the first episode we are recording since we are aware of the results.
Yeah.
So last week's were some sweet and innocent young men with everything to look forward to. So how you been doing?
That's a complicated question, really. So you know, you mentioned that this is our first time talking after the election. And there are I don't want to be too specific for a variety of reasons, but there are people in my life, obviously, as I'm sure is true for you and our listeners probably, who are responding to it in a way that and interacting with me regarding that response, right? And so that's been, you know, challenging to because most of the responses I'm talking about are negative ones, to put it simply. And people are having a hard time, you know, and they're reaching out for help. And it's a difficult thing to navigate. And that's only been a part of my week, but it's been such a significant part, you know, just since Wednesday, really, just 2 days ago for us, that it's kind of eclipsed everything else. I mean, up till then, you know, pretty good week, just work and, you know, doing the normal things, but that event kind of eclipsed everything else, and trying to help people cope with it who have been adversely impacted by it has been a challenge. What about you?
I have opted not to engage. All day Tuesday and pretty much all day Wednesday and Thursday, I was inside keeping to myself pretty high all the time.
Yeah.
Today is the first day I'm letting that creep in, because it has to happen eventually. And also, being high all the time like that kind of cuts me off from everything. And the world is where all my stuff is. So I better get back into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, of course, it's part of my profession to, you know, I can't.
I mean, people with jobs in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
People had to go out in the world and and Trish had the sorry, there's some angry cats in the background. Trish had the privilege. She had decided beforehand she was working from home on Wednesday, just in case. But she still had to work. You know, I have had the privilege to sort of drop out of things, except the cats. I've been very interested to see my reaction bleed through, especially today, now that I'm sort of letting it. I'm just sad. A lot of the feelings are very similar to the feelings we discussed when this happened in 2016. I think this is the first time I empathize with people who don't vote. I'm very much like, I'm a few months away from turning 48. I'm retired. I don't have any children. How much do I really have to be part of this society?
I mean, I think a lot of people are asking that question.
I'm not living where I thought I was living. And I mean, I'm not going to stop voting because honestly, it's just pretty damn easy and it seems like a big deal. And you know me, I don't break a rule if there's not a reason to. And I'm not going to stop donating to the important causes that are out there. Maybe we'll increase some of those donations. Although, at this point, we're not donating to any political parties, and I don't think that's likely to change. We're donating to charities that we believe strongly in. But otherwise, it's the only country I've got citizenship in, and like I said, all my stuff's here. And I have not only the privilege of not having to go to a job, but having the privilege of being a white person in the Midwest. My life's probably not going to change in a lot of material ways over the next 4 years. Terrible things are going to happen, and I'm going to vote against them, and I'm going to pay money for people to fight for them, but I'm also not going to pay a lot of attention because it just makes me feel worse. I don't know. I feel more isolated from the society I live in than I have before, and I may just go with that. I don't know. Not particularly funny or wise or interesting, but there it all is.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's everyone's going to react to it in a slightly different way. But there has been, for the people that I've interacted with since then, who have had distress over it, most of what you're expressing, there is that, they have that in common, right? Just about everything you said is common for just about, I mean, there's little differences, of course, the things that they're concerned about specifically, or the things they think will happen, won't happen, or maybe they have some hope that, for example, that it's not guaranteed that terrible things will happen, and that maybe certain things can still be stopped or whatever. But even if they have more hope than you have in that regard, that last sentiment, especially that you express, that I don't feel connected to the larger culture, the larger society. That's expressed, and it's expressed with some sadness and regret, like they, you know, that they find that sad and disturbing that they don't feel that connection.
I think that's how I felt 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's been the interesting thing, is what kind of person am I in since the last time?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, I don't feel the same as I felt in 2016. And some of that is various circumstances. Some of it is I'm not that same person anymore. I'm less angry and more sad.
Do you think that severance from the larger society that you felt in 2016 was never really healed or anything? And so now you're just sort of building on that.
It could be. I mean, the last 8 years is when I really got my whole not paying attention to the day-to-day news thing down pretty tight.
For the sake of your own mental health, though.
Yes, and mm-hmm. It's done amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
So we've decided not to watch the second season of Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
Why?
It's getting too AMC. It's me and AMC don't get along.
Right.
It's very quickly turning into the lengths people will go when they're desperate and how far they can fall and break that kind of stuff. And we just decided we didn't want to do it. That being said, the replacement show now we're watching is Dark Winds, which is a show that comes from AMC.
Right.
So I have concerns.
Well, there definitely is a genre of show that's the will they go there, right? Like, oh my gosh, how are they going to get out of this? And then you either anticipate where they're going to go and you're still shocked that they did, or you don't anticipate it and you're doubly shocked because, like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. That's crazy. I can't believe they did that. That's a definite genre, the will they go there genre.
And AMC just is really good at everybody being at their worst for a variety of reasons. But, like, I've never made it through an AMC show. And I don't know why I keep trying, but this is Trish's pick. And it's 1970s New Mexico. And there's been a murder. And then there's also separately been a bank robbery where the getaway helicopter was last seen in the area. And these two plot lines are coming together with the tribal police. And, you know, it's got racism in it, but it's got racism for a time when people wouldn't even deny it. Like, it's when people who are just like, yeah, no, it's cool to be racist. So that's not fun. But the second episode wasn't as bad, and so we'll see. I don't know. It's Trish's one. Not bailing yet. The main thing that makes it interesting for us is the lead cop is played by the guy who played Big in Reservation Dogs and who's also been in Longmire and a couple other things. And it's really fun to see him playing like a serious, dramatic role as this sort of grizzled cop with a past. And so that's kind of fun. But we'll see how that goes. But meanwhile, we are almost finished with Agatha All Along.
Mm.
Have you watched that at all?
Mm-mm.
Are you planning to watch it?
Well, so we don't have Disney Plus anymore.
But Star Wars.
Yeah. And actually, you know, we got into it because you gifted me a subscription, remember? So I could watch, you did it so I could watch Muppet Show.
But Star Wars.
Which I did. And, you know, actually we're interested, like the Acolyte or whatever. We're still interested in seeing that. I don't know if it's any good, but most of the criticism I've heard of it aren't things that would bother me. So we're kind of interested in seeing it, but like, I don't. And so we do have plans to see these things somehow, like maybe, oh, well, let's sign up again for a couple months, you know. We got rid of it because it was at a time where there wasn't really anything. There were some things on the horizon, but it's like, but we're going to pay for 5 months of this before those things come along. And we needed to cut some corners to budget and things like, well, let's just get rid of it. And if we're really itching to see these things, then we'll just pick it back up again. No big deal. And we haven't yet.
Disney
so
is one that is hard to justify in a lot of ways.
So, you know, so we just did that just to save some money and not pay for a thing we weren't going to use for 5 or 6 months or however long we thought it would be. And now that those shows have come out, of course, like you, it's like, oh, well, let's just wait till they're all, you know, they've all come out. And then Acolyte was done, but then, oh, Agatha's coming. Well, maybe we should wait for that. You know what I mean? And after a while, you start to think, how important are these things to us if it's really so easy for us to put them off? And it's money that, you know.
And time and energy.
Yeah. So we might still, because we talk about them, we're both still interested in them. And we hear things, you hear criticism and praise both. The criticism doesn't seem to mean anything to us, and the praise seems, you know, oh, this is interesting. So we might. And another thing that might happen is, you know, with grandkids, it, you know, and they like some Disney things, they might be like, okay, well, you know, when the grandkids come over, we want to play Disney things. So let's just have it for that. This year around Halloween, it was actually a little before Halloween and on Halloween, both when the kids, grandkids were over, we put Nightmare Before Christmas on because we have a Blu-ray of that. And it was the first time they'd ever seen it. And they really liked it.
They kept going, what's this?
Right. So, and that was fun because, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas is kind of a big deal to our family. And you know, when a new generation comes along and they like really love it, that makes you feel good because, I don't know.
It is a big part of the pasty white culture.
Yeah, it was a big deal to our family for some reason. I mean, I think it came out in 93, and that was the year that our oldest was born, you know. So yeah, 1993, it would have come out and you know, our oldest was born in December, you know. Did it come out at Christmas time or Halloween time? Do you remember?
I would have been in high school.
I can look that up later, but anyhow, so it's like all the kids have always known, and this is kind of funny. I asked Alex about this because the trick or treaters in it, you know, Lock, Shock and Barrel, they kind of resemble our kids. Weirdly, I always thought that, and I asked her.
We're always talking about kidnapping the Sandy Claus.
But I mean, I told the grandkids before I put it in, oh, and you're going to see your mom and your uncles in this, and their mom Alex laughed, and their dad did too because they all knew exactly what I was talking about. And I asked Alex, I said, did you ever think that when you were little, like that you guys kind of resembled these characters? She said, oh yeah. And I said, and of course one of them's a girl, and that's you in the middle, who's the witch. But what about the boy? Oh, this is him and this is it. Yep, that's right, that's correct. you perceived it just like we did. So that was kind of funny. But I mean, we have, I don't know if we have that much Nightmare Before Christmas stuff, but we do have that kind of stuff in the house, and it's just always been a part of Christmas and or Halloween and or even, like, you know, Thanksgiving, right? That's like the perfect time to play it. So it was fun to see the little kids really get into it. And it wasn't a guarantee that they would, because the boy is kind of leery of scary things. The girl, she's only 1.5 and she seems to like scary things, but you could see he's a little leery of them, and also he has nightmares sometimes, and so we weren't sure, but he really liked it. So
there were some scary bits of Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But they didn't seem to bother him.
Everybody was always saying that I was Oogie Boogie, so I've always come across as just a burlap sack full of bugs. We discussed some if we were going to file a lawsuit when it came out.
Well,
parallel thinking could be at work.
I mean, that character is amazing in how it's conceived and how it's animated. And how it's animated, but also the performance is... The guy that performs that character does a ridiculously good job. I mean, voice acting is hard. I know a lot of people, I don't think, realize that, but it is so hard. And to do it while you're singing, right, too, because he's singing a lot of his parts. Like, wow, just amazing. I mean, it's one of the great voice acting performances, really, of all time, Oogie Boogie and that. I mean, everybody else does a fine job too, but, like, you know, Jack Skellington is voiced by two people. There's the guy who played Prince Humperdinck or whatever, does
Chris Sarandon.
Yeah, does his speaking, And then Danny Elfman does the singing, which was a funny story. I didn't know that for a long time. It was a funny story. I heard Danny Elfman tell it when I think it was Tim Burton who went to him and said and told him, yeah, your singing's great, but your speaking parts aren't working out. We're going to have to hire someone else for that.
So it wasn't Chris Sarandon can't sing. It was Danny Elfman can't speak.
Well, so his singing performance was very expressive and cool too, right? But apparently just speaking, like he could sing a song and be expressive about it because, well, mostly because he wrote them, right? It's like he knows what the mood and the emotion is. But when it came to reading a script and lines like an actor,
But couldn't... Sally, what are you doing here?
Right, that kind of thing.
You must go get the Santa Claus.
Apparently. And yeah, like that he couldn't do. He could do the music, again, because he wrote it, for gosh sakes, all right? He could get the mood and the emotion and the expression, but he didn't write the lines. And so, like, I don't think he knew. I don't know. He just couldn't do that part very well. So... they said they were going to hire someone else.
Not until the advent of Lin-Manuel Miranda that some could manage to do both.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. But, yeah, everybody did a good job. And I guess Sal, and I don't think I knew this and then forgot it. But the person who voiced Sally was O'Hara.
Gilbert Gottfried.
No, what's her first name? Her last name is O'Hara. Yeah, which I think I knew that when it came out, but I'd forgotten it.
I definitely didn't know that.
Yeah,
she's so having the time right now. She's having the moment.
Is she? I don't know.
She's very popular. Mostly off of Schitt's Creek.
Yeah,
she's having a thing right
her,
now.
In that, she was amazing. She was really good, but everybody was you know, Eugene Levy, Dan Levy, and everybody did a great job in that, I thought. Yeah, so it was fun to watch it again with, you know, little kids and see that they really liked it. And apparently when they went home, they asked us to watch it a couple times at home too, so that was fun. But are you a fan of Nightmare Before Christmas at all, or no?
Yeah, it's okay. Fine. Yeah. I was a bigger fan when I was younger. Hmm. It's pretty good. It's me, so issues of consent get involved.
Oh, right.
We are genuinely cheering for the villains, and the success of the film is only when the villains finally fix what they fucked up. So... it is less a thing I'm into, but I love the music for it. I love the performances. It's visually amazing. I like many of my age, was like, oh, maybe I like Tim Burton. Not knowing, A, this wasn't Tim Burton, and B,
yeah, not technically.
Tim Burton's a lot of things.
Yeah.
But there were several years I called myself a Tim Burton fan. And I believe this movie is the reason for that.
Oh.
Because I hadn't seen Edward Scissorhands and shit like that at this point.
Oh, well, I want to say the Batman movie he made was like my first big introduction. But maybe it wasn't.
And the original Tim Burton Batman, I did not like at first. I came around on it. And I still maintain that the sequel is garbage, absolute garbage. But I haven't seen it in a very long time. So.
But I liked Edward Scissorhands. I'm surprised it's been
so long. No, Edward Scissorhands is good. It's very Tim Burton.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's been so many years since I last saw it.
Like a year ago.
Oh, yeah, that's been decades since I saw it. And that's odd because I remember, like, I don't know. So I had a college roommate and we became friends after we weren't living together. And he, you know, he really liked Danny Elfman's music, and I did too. And so he had this Edward Scissorhands soundtrack that he'd play like when I was over his house and stuff, and it was really good. I mean, it was fun to listen to. But yeah, I'm kind of surprised I haven't seen it in a very, very long time. It's kind of technically a Christmas movie, but
it is kind of technically a Christmas movie.
But I haven't seen it.
That's why we were talking Nightmare Before Christmas, because we got into the word of, is Die Hard a Christmas movie again? And so then I was like, well, is Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie, or is it a Halloween movie, or is it both? That one gets tricky, because within Nightmare Before Christmas, Halloween can both refer to a physical location and a date and the overall spirit that is the essence of it. And right. So, like I said, it's literally a movie about Halloween taking over Christmas. So it was like, well, for certain definitions of all of these things, it does get complicated. Because Trish was like, it happens to Christmas. And I'm like, yeah, but from Halloween. She's like, yeah, but it's not. Yeah, it gets.
But Halloween's over, and it's all exactly. About ramping up to and the day of Christmas.
So yeah. Really, it's a Thanksgiving movie.
Well, I've often advocated for that. I've often said, hey, let's not watch this on Halloween or Christmas. Let's watch it on Thanksgiving. Because, not just because it makes sense in the way we were just saying, but also because in my house, we're not allowed to listen to Christmas music until after Thanksgiving. So it's like, so why don't we watch Nightmare Before Christmas as a way to transition, right? That's a nice transition.
To cheat is what you're saying.
Yeah, cheat.
Yeah, I can't listen to Christmas music. What's this? Stumbling on Christmas music.
Anyway, it's, I don't know. We like it. It's, like I said, it's kind of a big deal. So glad that the kids like it.
As I said at the start of this sentence, we're watching Agatha All Along.
Yes. Is it?
Left.
Are they all out? They're all out?
I believe so.
Okay. You've got two episodes left. Okay. Two episodes left.
Yes.
Ben, how's it going?
So glad you asked.
Oh my gosh.
It is very deliberately a sequel to WandaVision.
Oh, yeah.
Like it takes place after WandaVision. We start with Agatha still under the spell in Westview and all that stuff. And it goes from there. It has, as many of you know, a really, really amazing cast. I love Catherine Hahn. It also has Aubrey Plaza. It also has Sasheer Zamata. It also has Patti LuPone. And a few other people who I didn't know, but now... Oh, Deborah Jo Rupp, who was in WandaVision, comes back a bit in it. And has some new actors I didn't know, but now I know. And they're all doing a really good job. It's extremely Marvel Cinematic Universe television.
Mm.
It is... Please stand by. It did its first season, or did the first half of the season, just dropping lots of breadcrumbs that didn't pick up. And then the second half of the season is like four major twists per episode. So, standard Marvel TV series.
Yeah.
It's not unentertaining. It's fine. I doubt if they do like a second season or anything, I'd watch it. Although it feels very limited series, so I don't know that I would. It's fine, but it's very Marvel. So.
What else are you watching?
Garbage. Real bad.
Didn't see any good movies or anything? Nothing on your list?
Oh, we saw one movie worth speaking of.
Oh, okay, good. What was it?
We saw Thelma.
Oh.
Not to be confused with Comma and Louise. This is a relatively new movie called Thelma. Sorry, my anti-spyware is deciding right now. So it's time to pop things up. Thelma is a very recent movie. I think it's from this year, if not, then it's from last year. Notable for having a long-running character actress, June Squibb, who's been in every movie you've seen, but always in the background, in a starring role. It is about a 93-year-old lady who gets scammed by scammer people on the phone into giving up a bunch of money to scammers.
Oh.
And then decides she's going to get it back.
No.
With the assistance of her also old friend, because he has a two-person electric scooter, played by Richard the original Shaft Roundtree.
Mm.
But now in his 80s. It also has a lot of good people in it. Parker Posey's in it. Clark Gregg is in it. Couple other bigger names that are sort of surprises at the end. I don't really want to spoil. It was marketed, if you go look for a trailer, as a comedy.
Yeah.
It is some that. Mm. It is much more of a drama with some comedic elements.
Oh.
And I was not really prepared for that. It is extremely personal. It was written, directed, edited by the same dude. And I'm pretty sure, based on something we saw in the end credits, the main character, elderly woman, is based entirely on his grandmother. Mm. Whether or not his grandmother actually did something like this, I don't know. But there's literally a scene near the end of the film, and then during the credits, we see what appears to be that real life scene that took place with him and his grandmother in the car with almost the exact same lines. So this was very clearly a very personal project to him, and it was a lot to do about growing old and feeling not as useful, but also just the idea that use or not use can sort of come at any age and in any circumstance, and all the usual sort of old person things. And I didn't care that much. I think it is a good movie. People should probably check it out. It was difficult for me because, in my opinion, it was quite tonally uneven. And it was funny, bordering on silly. And then the next minute, it was very, very serious and kind of painful. And it was not good at telegraphing when we were going to switch from one to the other. And I found that somewhat jarring. But it was a fun time, and it's great to see those actors doing stuff. I'm a fan of June. I've been a fan of Richard Roundtree forever. He's just fun stuff. But that's it, other than just absolute garbage movies. That one was pretty good. I think tonight, because... On the premise that nothing matters at all anywhere anymore, I think we're maybe going to drop some cannabis gummies and watch Sasquatch Sunset tonight.
Sasquatch Sunset?
Somebody's got to watch it. Have you not heard about Sasquatch Sunset?
No.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ is in it?
I mean, maybe. This is a movie having really big names in it. Jesse Eisenberg is the only one I can remember off the top of my head. but it's three other actors that are also likewise quite big in the acting scene, dressed as Sasquatches, and it is a, I think, entirely dialogue-free feature-length film about a family of Sasquatches.
I have never heard of this.
I mean, go look it up. Yeah, I mean, I've never felt that I wanted to see this movie, but I've always known I was going to.
Always knew you were going to.
The art house scene, and everybody's like, oh, it's surprisingly beautiful. It's got a fair bit of, I think, bodily comedy in it with the Sasquatches. Based on the trailer, it's, yeah. I don't know, man.
Huh.
But we're going to do it.
I never heard of it at all. That's,
well, now I mean,
It's actually something that I expect I would have heard of, but I didn't. Well,
as soon as we're done here, look in the trailer and then see. But yeah, it's a thing. If you'd like to stop whatever this was from happening, please email us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com, and then we'll talk about that instead of whatever this was.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.